It's KNPR, State of Nevada. I'm Dave Becker. Can I get you another Mai Tai? More sunscreen? But I'm assuming that instead of sitting in a hot car heading to work, you'd rather be in a cabana on the beach or by the pool, reading a good book. Well, maybe in a few weeks, you'll get to do that. When the trip is planned, whether it's to the beach, the mountains, or just hanging out in your own backyard, a good read can make a summer vacation feel luxurious. With that in mind, we've called up some of our favorite readers, lovers of books, to pull together book recommendations for you. And in a few minutes, we'll also want to take your calls and your recommendations, especially if you've got some of your own summer reading lined up. And we've got some recommendations posted at knprnews.org. But we're joined now by our own readers, include Cindy Reed, arts and entertainment editor at Vegas 7, and Miley Chapman, a novelist and associate professor of English at UNLV. Cindy, Miley, welcome.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Excellent to have you here. I'm going to start with, kind of a basic question before we get into some title descriptions and even reviews, if you will. Miley Chapman, what makes for a great summer read?
Oh, for me, it's something completely immersive. I love the experience of having a book with me, and I have to keep it in my bag so that if I have to go to the bank to do something and I'm in the line for 5 minutes, I'll have the book with me because I don't want to waste any time that I could be reading that book.
So, Cindy Reed, you've said there's not a lot of difference for you between summer and the rest of the year.
That's because I'm pretty much always reading.
You're always reading. You've always got the book.
And perhaps if I was a teacher, I would have a full summer vacation to read, but I don't, so... just always reading.
Any regret there?
No.
Okay. I just figured I should ask just in case. Now, Miley Chapman, I want to start with you because one of your recommendations is The Passage by Justin Cronin. It begins in 2014, and it lays out an apocalyptic and then later post-apocalyptic world that's overrun by vampire-like beings. So I guess we're not done with vampire literature yet?
That's what I thought when I first heard about the book before it was published. I was irate, primarily irate. Does the world need another $3 million vampire book? Really? Really? And then I read it and I was transfixed. I went back on my word. I said I didn't want to read any more vampire books. But it's really not a vampire book. I was guilty of jumping to conclusions. It's fantastic.
Okay. What makes it fantastic? I mean, what does Justin Cronin do in it that makes it so good?
I think some of it is that he's clearly a literary novelist. His first two novels were critically very well received, and he won the Penn Hemingway Award for one of them. He has an MFA from the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and his first two books did, you know, pretty well as far as literary titles go. And then he apparently decided to write something that would be successful, commercially successful, and had a series of conversations with his then 9-year-old daughter while she was on the bike and he was jogging. Just talking about story and what should happen next, and he wrote The Passage, and it was sold. I've done a little too much reading about it in the background because I love the backstory that it was sent around by his agent under a pen name, because the idea that a literary novelist had written this
would write a vampire
right was maybe not a selling point in its favor, but it did very well, obviously, and it's just I think you can feel in there that kind of child's expectation of what a story is and what a story should do.
Mm-hmm. So what happens in this story? I mean, is there a way you can kind of summarize it? Or
so much happens, and it jumps so far and wide in time and place. It's essentially a contagion novel. There's a virus, and I think the word vampire appears once, if that, and maybe twice at the most. It's really about an illness, a virus that spreads across the country, and so the creatures are called virals. So it's about humanity basically collapsing under the weight of a viral infection that causes violence and, you know, thirst for blood.
So, Miley Chapman, you could see yourself sitting at the beach with maybe a second Mai Tai, just turning the pages on a novel about virals in a post-apocalyptic scenario.
Sounds weird when you put it like that.
Cindy Reed?
She actually recommended that book to me when I was going through a breakup, and I loved it because it was the only book that was like dark enough to match my mood.
Okay, so it worked from that perspective. Now, Cindy Reed, you say you're a big believer in reading for fun, and you say it's no fair for books that people watch movies for fun and then books for self-improvement. You say you follow your bliss, which for you are rock biographies.
Oh yeah,
that, talk about that.
You know, my favorite movie is Almost Famous. I am an arts and entertainment editor, so part of what I do is write about rock stars. And I think it's kind of like the romantic Great American Road story, in a sense, going on tour. A lot of them kind of have the same kind of story arc. One that I read recently was In the Pleasure Groove, Love, Death, and Duran Duran by the bassist John Taylor.
Duran Duran's bassist?
Duran Duran's bassist,
wow.
Yes. And I actually listened to it on tape, and he has the most like melodious voice, and he would tell the worst stories of doing terrible things, like trashing bags of fan mail at his parents' house and dumping model girlfriends and all these crazy shenanigans. And you couldn't help but love him as he's telling the story.
So just a great anti-hero, kind of,
yes.
Sounds like. Now, from the season's latest crop of books, as I understand it, you're a few chapters into Laura McBride's We Are Called to Rise. We had her on a couple of weeks ago. It was a wonderful conversation. We Are Called to Rise is based in Las Vegas. Laura McBride, of course, is a Las Vegan. As you read through it, what do you think about why the book is getting such good reviews? I mean, it's gotten some really good reviews nationally.
You know, I think it's just really well written, and she's coming from a place of honesty. I'm not super far into the book quite yet, but you just connect with all these different characters. It's from multiple points of view, and it certainly helps for me personally, at least, that she's a Las Vegan. It's set in Las Vegas, and it's stories that I think that modern America, contemporary times, we can really relate to.
Mm-hmm. And Miley Chapman, you'd recommended The Passage by Justin Cronin. What other titles are you pointing people to for the summer?
Well, now that I'm looking at my list, they're all dark and creepy and about contagion and terrible things. But one is a book I read years ago, Smell a Sense of Snow, which is another. I like the big doorstopper, really long ones that once you get into, they don't let you go, and it's a complete world. But also,
yeah, tell us, remind us about that. I mean, it was a great movie some years ago, but remind us about that book.
The book, it starts in Copenhagen, and it's about a woman who's an ice morphologist who works for energy companies, and she is half Inuit and half Danish, and she's caught between these two kind of cultural worlds and doesn't fit into either, and is very misanthropic and intelligent and mathematical in her thinking. And a little boy who lives, an Inuit boy who's deaf, who lives in her building, which is basically a subsidized apartment building, falls to his death. And she sees in the ice something that doesn't quite add up to it having been an accidental fall. So she can see things that other people are entirely unaware of in the ice.
So it sounds like it turns into or becomes a detective story.
Yes.
She's not a detective, but it sort of moves in that direction anyway.
It does. A big, sprawling, adventurous, crazy book about...
The identity is an Inuit is what gives her that feeling for snow, that ability to see what most people don't.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Her mother was Inuit, and her father's a medical doctor, and those two things come together in her in such a way that she's able to be kind of analytical and yet really attuned to the natural world at the same time, mm-hmm. which is not the combination that we sometimes expect.
No, it's definitely not. So what else have you got on the list?
I always recommend the Ripley books by Patricia Highsmith to people because most people know them through the movies, or they know of the first book, The Talented Mr. Ripley. But there are five, and I love them, and they're hard to put down once you start.
Miley, this is creeping me out here. Now, on the other hand, the books themselves are wonderful. And Patricia Highsmith is, she's had stories become Hitchcock movies, and there's that sense of darkness in all the Ripley stories.
Definitely.
For those of us who didn't see The Talented Mr. Ripley, mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about who Ripley is.
Ripley is an American who doesn't have a family. He was raised by an elderly aunt that he's not very attached to. He lives in New York. He's pretty disconnected and disenfranchised. And he happens to walk into kind of a job by accident when he's mistaken for the friend of the son of a wealthy man who wants that son to be persuaded to come back from Europe, where he's very happy in Italy, has no intention of coming back. He's there squandering his inheritance, and he's delighted with that life. And the man sends Thomas Ripley, all expenses paid, to try to get him to come home, thinking that he's the son's friend. So Ripley is this character who insinuates himself into the lives of other people under false pretenses and likes that life and entrenches himself and has aspirations that are, you know, he's really a sociopath, but it's hard not to be charmed by him.
Yeah, yeah. Those aspirations lead him into some pretty dark places, don't they?
They do.
We are talking about summer reading with Cindy Rhea, the arts and entertainment editor of Vegas 7, and Miley Chapman, an associate professor of English at UNLV and an author herself. And we'd like to hear from you as well. Have you got the book pile lined up for the summer? What books have you read recently that you've liked and would recommend, or what titles do you want to get your hands on this summer? Got a big book you take on vacation but never quite manage to read? Maybe a few children's books you can suggest for kids to read this summer while they're out of school? And while you're at it, just curiosity, do you read those books? Do you pile up the books, or do you prefer an e-reader or an iPad? We'd like to hear from you. Join our conversation at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You can also post comments online at knprnews.org or tweet us anytime. We're on Twitter. Our address is at knprnews. So, Cindy Reed, what's your philosophy on summer reading? I mean, should it be kind of escapist? Even if you're reading about Duran Duran, do you want to go into other worlds that you don't generally voyage as the editor, an editor of Vegas 7?
You know, I kind of believe in an all of the above approach. I try to mix it up with classics, new books, and just things that are completely fun and escapist. So all of the above.
Now, you are somebody who's you're putting your time where your mouth is in terms of tackling the big books. As I understand it now, you're about 80% of the way through Anna Karenina.
Oh, yes.
So you're doing Tolstoy for the early summer. Holy cow.
Yeah, it sounds so boring. I hate to say that, like when you think of reading Russian literature, but Tolstoy is actually a page turner. Like, this is such a fun and exciting book. I am just completely reading it for fun.
Well, reading for fun. For those of us who haven't had this experience, you know, Russian novels in the summer, how come? What is the fun that you're getting out of it?
Well, I think that you just get wrapped up in other people's lives. It's more akin to watching one of those HBO TV series where you just lose yourself and you think their lives are the real ones and your life is the imaginary one.
All right. Now, for those of us who haven't done Tolstoy, didn't see the HBO series on Anna Karenina, give us a thumbnail sense of the story.
So it follows a bunch of aristocratic Russian families in what I guess is the turn of the century. They have trains and horses and big fur coats, which I always wish I had one. And it's kind of their lives and romantic lives. The Anna in question is an aristocratic woman married to a statesman, kind of author, big deal guy, but she is not in love with him. She thinks he has creepy, veiny hands. And she's in love with this hot soldier, except that back then you weren't allowed to have divorce. And so she kind of considers leaving him, and bad things ensue.
Bad things happen after that. Miley Chapman, is there a big Russian novel type of book that would be on your nightstand, or something you'd like to read but haven't really managed to get into yet?
Actually, I have a really nice copy of Anna Karenina that's been waiting for me with nice wide margins, and it opens, it's hardback. You know, I mean, it's actually a tactilely pleasant thing to hold, because I'm thinking that when I do get into it, I wanna make it an easy, smooth, you know, escapist experience, but I just haven't gotten to it yet.
See, I think that's the problem with really pretty novels like that, is that it feels like too much of a big thing that you're undertaking. I actually started reading Anna Karenina in like the weirdest way. It was like Valentine's Day and my boyfriend was over and we didn't really know what to do. Like, it's supposed to be romantic, but you're just kind of staring at each other like, oh, okay, what happens? So I was just like, let me download a sample of Anna Karenina to my Kindle. I didn't even really know how long it was. And you can't see the length on a Kindle. So I was like, oh, let's just try this. So we like started reading aloud to each other.
You read to each other.
And I know it sounds so cheesy. And then it was like, oh, the sample's done. Okay, well, I guess I'll just download this, you know. So then you keep reading. And then he bought the physical copy, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I did not realize it was that long. But it's kind of like a drug. You get a little bit, you get hooked, and then you're in it, as opposed to like thinking, oh, this is some big, giant, serious thing I want to undertake.
So did you know what you were getting into?
No.
You really didn't know.
No.
It's like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to jump in and say that there are sort of gateway drugs into the Russian reading experience that aren't necessarily so big. And one of them might be like Isaac Babel stories might be a good one, or The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov. If anybody's kind of thinking of venturing into that territory but just got scared off by Cindy's description of how long Anna Karenina is.
On the other hand, you and your boyfriend started, did you kind of race to see who could read the book first, or did you just take time reading to each other?
Literally read it aloud to each other for maybe 150 pages, and then we just kind of gave up on that because after a while that just becomes too laborious. So then it was like, hey, do you want to read this on your own? Oh, yeah, me too. And then it was like, oh, I'm on page 632. What page are you on? and so that's how it is right now.
It can turn into a competition after a while, can't it? Yeah. We're talking about summer reading. Our guests are Marlee Chapman, who is an author herself and an associate professor in UNLV's English department, and Cindy Reed, who is the arts and entertainment editor at Vegas 7. We'd like to hear what you're reading as well. Call us and tell us. Join our conversation. Let us know what's on your summer list at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Have you taken a run at reading a Russian classic aloud? How did it go? 702-258-3552 or knprnews.org. Now, Cindy, as you mentioned, in downloading a little bit of Anna Karenina, you use an iPad with a My Kindle app to download some titles. Do you ever find yourself reading books that you would never have bought in a bookstore?
Well, yeah, that's pretty much most of the books now that there's so few bookstores remaining in Las Vegas. There's still libraries. That's what's great. And I'll go to libraries. I have checked Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace out of the library at least two, maybe three times, incurred large fines, and never finished it. And so finally I was like, I'm just going to save some money and download this book. And so now Infinite Jest is with me at all times, on my cell phone, on my iPad, on my Kindle. I am never without Infinite Jest. And I still haven't read it.
I was going to ask you. tell us about Infinite Jest, but you haven't read it yet. But it's on the to do list, Miley.
I'm wondering if anybody out there has finished Infinite Jest.
Is it that kind of a story? Where
I know a lot of people who've started, myself included, and gotten half, three quarters, even maybe of the way through, and never actually make it to the end.
You made it farther than I did.
You get lost in a thicket of footnotes, do you?
Among other places to get lost in it.
Now, many online bookshops offer titles for free or for 99 cents. And I'm wondering, have you found anything in the free section or the discounted bin online?
You know, I actually found a rock biography in the discounted bin online. It's what I want to read after Anna Karenina is Kicking and Dreaming, A Story of Heart, Soul, and Rock and Roll by Anne and Nancy Wilson of Heart, along with a helper writer, Charles Cross. And it was just on like a daily deal, so I think it was $1.99, normally full price, and I just downloaded it because I love rock biographies, but now that I think about it, they're kind of all stories about men. And so here's a story of some lady rock stars.
The Wilson sisters, they've got quite a tale to tell, so I'll bet that's some good reading.
I can't wait.
Yeah. 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552. Tell us about your summer reading plans. David joins us in Las Vegas. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, happy to be here.
Thanks, you're on the air.
So I'm reading Dune, actually, on my phone right now, and I had the exact same experience that she did with starting Anna Karenina on the Kindle. I think I got about 40 or 50 pages worth in before I actually looked at a hard copy of it to see how big it was, and I was just amazed.
Yeah, Frank Herbert is that's a lot to be reading on a phone, David.
Yeah, I'm reading it on a reasonable sized screen, so it's not so bad. But I'm also reading a book called Ready Player One. When I get tired of, you know, trying to sort through all the stuff in Dune, I fall back to that one, which I'm actually reading in a hard copy version. It's a really fun, light 80s throwback kind of book.
Excellent. David, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate the tip. 702-258-3552. Sam in Las Vegas is next. Sam, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Going great. Going great, thank you. You're on the air.
Cool. Well, actually, one of the greatest things my fiancé reads to me is Pat Rothfuss's Name of the Wind, and then the second book is A Wise Man's Fear, and we just finished the second one, and we're waiting for the third one to come out. It's an excellent book.
Yeah. Hey, Sam, talk about you having your fiancé read to you. Is that a great way to go through a book?
It's a great way to go through a book, but it's also a great way to stay connected. We started our relationship as a long distance, and so we would FaceTime to each other, and every night he'd read me a couple of chapters. So it's I think if couples haven't started reading to each other, it's an excellent way to stay kind of in touch with each other, even when you're not next to each other.
Yeah. So how long has he been reading to you?
9 months he's been reading to me. We just finished up the second book, and now we're eagerly waiting for the third installment. So.
Excellent. Hey, Sam, thanks so much for the call. 702-258-3552. 702-258-3552. What's on your summer list? Are you reading to a sweetheart? You share that literature like that. How is it? Is that fun? Tell us. 702-258-3552. Miley Chapman, I was going to ask you, where are you in terms of making the switch to an iPad or e-reader? You talked about the tactile feeling of the hardback Anna Karenina. Are you thinking about giving that up?
I do read on the iPad. The convenience of it for traveling, for instant gratification, just can't be beat. What I am not smart enough to figure out how to do is take notes or you know, do anything in terms of annotating a book in e-format. So if I'm taking notes, if I'm making notes in the margin or, you know, in any way stealing from the book for creative purposes, then I tend to read on paper.
And David was talking about reading Dune on the phone.
Oh my God, those are great summer books, by the way. Great ones, but I can't imagine reading them on the phone. Oh my gosh.
You can't see an awful lot on even if it's a big screen, can you? Cindy Reed, you've said that there's instant gratification with an e-reader or iPad. Talk a little bit about that. Tell us what you mean. I mean, how is it different from gratification you might get from reading a book, and as Miley says, maybe taking notes or just kind of notating some things as you go?
Well, I love, first of all, nothing more than the feel of walking through a bookstore, preferably one with wooden floors, and you have the smell and you just are surrounded by books. It's like heaven to me. Unfortunately, there's just not that many places, and to get a book, you now have to wait till the bookstore is open, mm-hmm. you know? And so at any moment, I can think of any book and just have it within 30 seconds.
Yeah. Miley?
I do just want to say that Cindy and I both know that there are some really fine used bookstores in town. In fact, that's how we met, was in a discussion about the used bookstores in Vegas. Which is a different kind of gratification. You can't really go in looking for something that you want in particular. It's more of a discovery thing.
Hmm. There really aren't very many bookstores left here, are there? Borders is gone. There are just three Barnes & Nobles left. And there are a number of used bookstores. There's some fairly close to where we are, the radio station, and a lot of them scattered around the valley. Is that a situation where we're worse off as a society? Are we the poorer for that? That the number of bookstores out there just seems to be kind of trickling away?
Yes, I think we are, because some of the pleasure of reading is, you know, sort of the same pleasure of a liberal arts education, which is that you don't know what your end point is. You don't know what you're in it for. You're in it for the journey. And that is missing when you know what you're ordering already. Mm-hmm. And if you can browse and if you can look, then you can surprise yourself. You should all go to Dead Poets Bookstore, Greyhound's Books, Amber Unicorn Academy. Lots of wonderful ones in town.
Yeah. Cindy, have you got a favorite or two of the used bookstores?
Not really.
Ones with the wooden floors that you talk about?
I'm from Texas. There's Half Price Books there, which is giant. Mm-hmm. I was in Denver. I went to Tattered Cover Bookstore. I think it's actually just part of it. of a larger trend where you saw where 20 years ago there were lots of indie bookstores. They were taken over by the big box ones, mm-hmm. which are now being supplanted by Amazon, which I think will then create an opening for independent bookstores to open yet again now that the big boxes are being destroyed. And oddly enough, there is a bookstore that is in the works for being built downtown, and it should be awesome, and I'm super excited about that.
So, Miley, I'll give the last word to you.
Oh, no, I'm going to choke up because I was just daydreaming about the possibility of there being a bookstore downtown and how wonderful that will be. That'll be a great thing. But no, one thing I want to say about Vegas is people read here. I think people don't expect that of Las Vegas, but everybody I know here reads, whether they're reading highbrow, lowbrow, whatever it might be. People read here.
Indeed they do. We've got a list of some suggested summer reading from Miley and from Cindy as well at knprnews.org. Cindy Reed is the arts and entertainment editor at Vegas 7. Miley Chapman is an associate professor of English at UNLV. Thanks, both of you, for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.